All right, and good morning to you. Thank you very much for tuning into the program. Jesse Brown is a publisher and journalist with Canada Land, and he joins us on One. Good morning, Jesse. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. Are we live on the air right now?
Oh, yeah. We're live on the air across the world.
So I'm live in the ears of more people in Newfoundland and CBC. I can say anything right now.
Look, I love podcasting, but there's one thing it can't do. We can't do live. Live is the beating heart of radio. And the live call-in show is arguably the highest form of the craft. Open air stretches out before you, thousands of ears waiting to hear what's next. No filters, no net. Anything could happen. Live call-in radio is, of course, still alive, but it's wounded. Much of what is left of it is heard on AM stations, and AM is on the decline. Car manufacturers do not even want to include AM dials on the new cars that they ship out. You may have heard about Elon Musk's fight with the U.S. government about that. So these may very well be the last days of talk radio. But not in Newfoundland. In Newfoundland, there's a local AM station that's been around for over 80 years, and its daily call-in show is bigger and more influential than anything else around. It's bigger than the CBC. It's bigger than any local newspaper. It is arguably a bigger deal in Newfoundland than social media. Some call it a religion, a church of chat, where anyone from your neighbor down the block to the Prime Minister himself, is welcome and shows up. This station is an institution, and the truth is, it's gone completely under my radar. I had no idea that either this station or this show even existed until we sent our colleagues from our sister show Commons to Newfoundland to tell the story of the death of the cod fishery for their excellent season on labor in Canada called Work, which you really should be listening to. They came back from that trip and they told me, Jesse, you cannot talk about the media in Canada without talking about this station. In fact, you can't really talk about Canada without talking about this station. As local legend has it, Newfoundland would not be a part of Canada if this station did not exist. So we're going to talk about it. Our reporter, Cherise Suturin, will tell you all about it. And I'm going to talk to it on the air, live to tape. Before we're done, you will hear how my appearance on this show, coast to coast in Newfoundland, turned out. Today's episode is all about VOCM AM, the voice of the common man.
No, Patty, you drank the Kool-Aid. You drank the Kool-Aid as you usually do,
what
Patty.
Kool-Aid, Bruno? Listen, you're a paid... You speak on behalf of who pays you, man. How dare you call me a shill?
I'm not paid anything.
I'm sick of you, man. Listen.
Get that straight. I'm not paid anything. I'm a volunteer at the Sierra Club. It's a volunteer-driven
Yeah, good for you. You are, Bruno. Listen, man, I don't drink anybody's Kool-Aid. There's nobody got enough money or influence to put a glass in front of me that I want to drink. For the love of God, can we get that straight?
We love this kind of thing in podcasting. A fiery interview, host and guest going head-to-head over important topics. It keeps listeners engaged, keeps them coming back for more. So when I heard that there was a radio talk show in Newfoundland that had been beating out its competitors for years, beating out Canada Land's audience by magnitudes, I expected excitement. And there was some of that. But there was also a lot of just talking.
And in no way do I think he should have been given an absolute discharge. I think the Crown...
Prior to 1960s, I think it was very bleak. There was very little happening in terms of programs and services and legislation.
It's technically not feasible to get water. I don't understand that the water treatment plant on Ruby Line is just above the sphere.
The people across Newfoundland are listening and calling from 9 a.m. to noon, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Open Line on VOCM is on the air. And if you ask Newfoundlanders about Open Line, they tell you.
Open Line in Newfoundland, my dear, is religion.
I don't think there's one single person, no matter what age, wouldn't know what Open Line is.
You'll often hear somebody comment on a policy issue, whether it's provincial or municipal or federal, and then minutes later, you'll hear quite often the politician themselves call in to respond.
A religion with an audience spanning generations. Must hear broadcasting at every political level. In the age of podcasts and social media, in the age of layoffs and media cuts, this AM radio talk show still thrives. It's the biggest media success story you've maybe heard of. We're investigating today a mystery that's confounded us at Candleland. How is an AM radio show still popular?
This is VOCM Open Line. Call 709-273-5211. The biggest conversation in Newfoundland and Labrador starts now. Here's VOCM Open Line host Patty Daly.
Well, all right, and good morning to you. Thank you very much for tuning into the program. It's Monday.
When I was a kid, I used to dream about doing the play-by-play on Hockey Night in Canada, like the legend that is Bob Cole, but it just kind of fell into my lap.
Host Patty Daly has been at the helm of Open Line for over 10 years. I reached him at a studio in Newfoundland to ask if he had some special knowledge of radio, something that's kept people listening for so long.
I just fell into it. I had no background. I had no training. I didn't really have any interest in doing it. I was playing recreational hockey with my buddies, and someone sitting alongside me said, so-and-so was looking for a guest to come on their sports radio show on CHMR, which is Memorial University's own in-house radio station. And so I said, if he ever needs a guest, tell him I'm happy to come on. And so, lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, I get a call from that host, and he was, quote-unquote, impressed or intrigued with me. So he called me up the next week and asked me if I wanted to do interviews and hockey intermissions covering the American Hockey League here in town.
After a stint on TV, he had his big break in radio, and eventually Daly took the helm of the province's most popular call-in show.
And as they say, the rest is history. Here I go.
Patty and I have actually worked together since Patty's first day, when Patty came into VOCM as the...
Greg Smith is the program director at VOCM.
The man is the smartest person I know, and I'm not afraid to put that on the record, because he can switch topics. He can go from a health accord conversation that's big changing revelations in the health care of Newfoundland and Labrador to a conversation with a guy who just wants to go out and fish this summer during the recreation food fishery and wants to know when those dates are going to be announced. He knows everything, in and out, and if he doesn't know, he will get it, and he will put it out over the airwaves. Patty is just a wealth of knowledge. He's an open encyclopedia, and I don't know where he fits all the information to, because he has too much.
To sum up, Daly was playing hockey, had no training as a journalist, and fell into one of the most popular, most politically significant shows in Newfoundland. And 5 days a week, Patty Daly talks to Newfoundlanders about everything. From...
So, big night for the Leafs and the Leafs fans. See if they can stave off elimination Game 6 against the Boston Bruins. They get teased or taunted or razzed about 1967.
To...
Also, for those of you listening who are tech savvy, I have a family who's been asking me, and I've been looking around to some of my tech buddies. They need some information and some guidance as to how to unlock a Facebook account. This one particular person.
To...
Good morning, Prime Minister. You're on the air.
Good morning, Patty. It's great to be back on VOCM.
Happy to have you, sir, and I know you're doing it.
But not everyone agrees with what he's got to say.
Oh, well, I've been called every name in the book, for starters. Some of them, anyway. I'm not afraid to say it to my face or while I'm pumping gas or standing in line at the grocery.
One source of on-air disagreements is a former frequent caller named Bruno Morcocchio. He was an environmental activist that took Daly to task over its coverage of the Muskrat Falls hydroelectric project.
The 2 years of environmental assessment is plenty of time for these experienced, educated folks to do their job. End of story.
You didn't hear what I said. And again, you're just trotting out the propaganda that comes from the federal government. Let's move on to Muskrat Falls.
Sure.
Why build? Why is it that we're building it, you paused
right.
it?
That's the question.
Why is it?
Right.
So you are assuming that there must be some reason.
Bruno, I asked the question. I thought it was a very intelligent question once
answer
again.
Answer the question.
What am I answering questions for what? Since when do I answer questions on why someone's doing something that I'm not doing?
Why are you building Muskrat?
But callers sometimes come with a completely different set of concerns. And Daly tries to make people feel like they can come to Open Line about anything.
I mean, I've had people on the show that, believe it or not, have called and they're suicidal on air. I mean, it's just unbelievable call to try to field and to try to navigate. So if we can talk about it honestly on air, we hope, or the hope is that's going to help someone else listen to the program that might think for the first time, I need some help. And I'm not going to be afraid to talk about it. Why? Because I'm listening to Patty Daly talk to some person on air about exactly the way I feel.
There might be something special about Daly's ability to go from fishing to mental health to interviewing the Prime Minister, all while keeping a cool head. However, juggling the unexpected comes with the Open Line territory. And while Daly is part of the show's success today, it has been popular with previous hosts. In fact, there have been many Open Line hosts with very different personas. In the 70s and 80s, it was the larger-than-life Ron Pumphrey.
Welcome to the Caribou Club. We have with us tonight a man who makes being a Newfoundlander his career. And here's Harry Hibbs and the Caribou Show Band to tell you all about Ron Pumphrey.
When we talk of Ronnie, baby, for he is the very best. He wakes up every morning with his stomach on his chest. He tries to talk to everyone.
That was the Caribou Show Band singing the praises of show host Ron Pumphrey. When was the last time someone literally sang the praises of a podcast host? And here's Pumphrey himself at a stage performance in Toronto.
Thank you, everybody. It's wonderful being here. The Americans, you know, have Nixon, Johnny Cash, and Bob Hope. And Newfoundlanders have Joey Smallwood, no Cash, and very little Hope.
Apart from his take on Newfoundlander humor, Pumphrey was known for booking psychics, criticizing the Catholic Church, and starting every show with his famous catchphrase, "Hello, my lovelies, and all the ships at sea." Then there's Randy Sims. He hosted Open Line just prior to Daly taking on the role. In January 2013, Sims and Natwash's chief, Simeon Chakapesh, got into a debate about hunting.
Why are you guys going to seriously go out there and hunt these caribou?
Well, that's not... I think you're missing mixed messages.
Really?
It's too stupid.
Hunting these caribou is not stupid?
It's not stupid, no.
It's not?
It's slaughtering pigs and cows. Is that stupid?
No. We got millions of pigs and cows. If you were going to slaughter the last pig, I'd argue you were pretty damn stupid.
Randy, get your facts straight before you say anything.
Don't be an idiot.
The next day, Chakapesh goes on the show asserting that he will not be accepting Sims' apology.
Are you satisfied with, do you accept Mr. Sims' apology?
I'm sorry, I cannot accept his apology because he said basically on the radio this morning and he said he's going to do it again. So why do I have to accept that? He's going to do insulting people like that, emailing people like that. So
I think his point, I heard that.
A few days later, Sims announced his retirement and stepped down from the show. The host is, of course, the heart of a call-in show. But over the years, there's been a variety of characters in that role. Very different characters. So if we're looking for the secret of success for Open Line, we have to go beyond individuals in front of the mic.
Line's best home comfort plan. Game time is 7:30 tonight on VOCM, your sports station.
This is VOCM, where it's calling home.
Maybe the show's success is tied to its deep roots in the community. While Open Line has only been around for a few decades, VOCM is one of the oldest stations in Canada. That station ID we just heard is from the 1960s, but the station actually first took to the airwaves in 1933. VOCM was the original call sign, but locals gave it a nickname, voice of the common man. From the very start, it did what local stations do.
Brings the time 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. Once again, let's go back to Terra Nova Motors with Buddy Guilfoyle and Ross Murphy.
2 7 8 9 10 3. You bought it, sir.
It went out into the community covering local events. And that means almost any local event.
Wait, 400 and, what was it, 475?
This tape is from a car auction in the 1960s.
It's 450. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
They broadcast over an hour of this. Because that's what real local radio has always done. Local news, local sports, and local events, like auctions.
The auctioneer has just sold it for $475, half price. Boy, the bargains are fantastic during this exciting auction sale here at Terra Nova Motors, used car supermarket, Fort William.
But it wasn't just the small, day-to-day things that filled the airwaves back then. Sometimes the biggest issues of the day in calling. And I do mean big. In 1948, Newfoundland held a vote on whether or not to join Canada.
Parliament Hill in Ottawa becomes the background to yet another piece of Canadian history, as with impressive ceremony, a new province is added to the territories of the Dominion. Mr. Mackenzie King was also present to welcome Newfoundland's representative, Mr. Gordon Bradley, as Secretary of State for the province.
One of the loudest voices in support of Confederation was a well-known VOCM radio personality, Joey Smallwood. Before he became known as the last father of Confederation, Joey Smallwood was a frequent commentator on VOCM.
Mr. Smallwood?
Yes.
Look, I'm an old woman.
I'm not an old woman, ma'am.
Well, you're an old man.
Well, I don't feel very old, tell you the truth, but however...
Well, that's possible, but I had to agree with you. I was a girl that took...
Smallwood didn't hold back on giving his thoughts and opinions on the topics of the day, most often on Confederation, which he believed would be beneficial to Newfoundland. It was a big debate on the island. But in 1948, Newfoundland voted in a referendum to join Confederation on a razor-thin margin, 52%. Here's a clip from Memorial University's archives, and the voice you're going to hear is William Butler, who owned the station in the 1950s.
Well, when Joey Smallwood got off the plane in Ottawa in 1949, when he squeaked in with Confederation, a reporter came up to him and said, what was the single most important thing that brought about Confederation? And he said, VOCM radio.
So legend has it that Smallwood credited the impact of VOCM in Newfoundland joining Confederation and reshaping Canada. And Smallwood, as premier, kept up his relationship with VOCM for decades. Here's Paddy Daly.
As a matter of fact, then Premier Joey Smallwood, he would pull up in his car on Kemmout Road where our studios are. He would pull up in his car right there on the curb. A reporter would go out and put a microphone in through the window of his car to do sometimes daily hits with the Premier. I mean, can you imagine that? On a very regular basis, a reporter would see Joey Smallwood's car pull up, walk down the hill and put a microphone in and tape conversation with the Premier. Amazing.
The influence VOCM had on Confederation was maybe the first, but not the last time, they made significant policy-changing impact on Newfoundland. In February 1989, a caller called in and live to air alleged concerns about a suspected cover-up that occurred around abuse at the Mount Cashel Orphanage in the 1970s. And just a few days after that call, Justice Minister Lynn Verge announced that the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary was reopening the file on Mount Cashel. The investigation would eventually find that over 300 boys were physically and sexually abused at Mount Cashel. Here's current program director Greg Smith.
Broke on open line about this sexual abuse around Mount Cashel and the Roman Catholic Church that happened with one of the former hosts, Bill Rowe. If that program didn't exist, how many more years would have went by before something like that would have came through? It started with open line, that one call that kind of broke that story.
VOCM and open line have deep roots in their community. They've shaken up the political landscape and their listeners' lives in ways few media outlets can lay claim to. And that must have cemented their audience. But there's one more thing that's unique to Open Line that we need to take a look at. The final thing that defines the show is its location. Newfoundland, and of course Labrador, have a distinct culture. How much has where the show is shaped what the show is?
It works because we're in tune to what the province is talking about.
This is program director Greg Smith again.
It's the first original virtual party, that first ever Zoom call with 500,000 Newfoundlanders. It's what it's always been. It is that pre-social media. It's the virtual town hall. And I think that's what intrigues people to tune in, is you just don't know what you're going to get.
The local town hall might just be what people want. Attempts to switch things up haven't worked. In 2016, Smith said that the station tried to air syndicated talk shows from across the country. People just didn't like it.
So we brought in shows from the mainland, is basically from across Canada. So we did a show with Evan Solomon, I believe, was part of it. There's other shows that were around, like conversations with vets, financial shows. So we tried a bunch of different things. It didn't work. It wasn't the local things that people were used to. We got a bit of backlash for it, but it didn't work in our favor. So by August, I believe, of 2017, we were back to what we're doing today.
For Ryan Cleary, one-time Nightline host and current fisheries activist, the show has everything. It represents all sorts of Newfoundlanders.
The show is all over the map. It could be serious one moment. It could be touching the next. It could be humorous the moment after that. It's unpredictable, I suppose, just like Newfoundland. Newfoundland weather is unpredictable, just like Newfoundlanders are unpredictable.
We set out to figure out what makes this show tick. How does 3 hours a day of broadcasting people just talking thrive in an age of social media? Was it the people, the history, the place? It might be an alchemy of all three, or maybe something else we've missed altogether. I think the best way to find out is to call in.
What else do you want to talk about this morning, Jesse, before I ask you why the Leafs are so terrible?
I can't help you with that. I'm sports illiterate. But whenever I turn my attention towards Newfoundland and somebody points me in that direction, something fascinating is happening. But we do get lost in our own business here. Like, what frustrates you about the media that you're hearing out of Toronto?
Well, I think sometimes it's just far too much of it is 100,000 feet above sea level. When the reality of life is, politics is local. So, you know, when we see the small outlets, like small weekly newspapers or what have you, go by the wayside, it's really damaging to how we operate and what we understand and where we get our information. Because, you know, for instance, the big operations, the National Post are not going to cover a council meetings out in Badger. So if we lose that here in the country, we'll be relying on the big outlets, which have zero interest in the vast majority of things that concern me, concern my listeners, concern people living in this province. So we cannot lose that. So hopefully the smaller media outlets across the country, including this little outfit here in St. John's, will still be part of the media landscape. Because without it, we'll be talking about what's going on in Toronto, not what's going on in St. John's, not what's going on in Harbour Grace, not what's going on in Happy Valley Goose Bay, which I think is pretty important.
Preach on. That is absolutely accurate. And we're losing it all across this country. We're even losing it in Toronto. Even Toronto, you'll hear more coverage about what's happening, you know, globally or in the States. News is local, and that's what we're making. And people get so angry with journalists. You know, so much anger towards us. You guys are fake news. We're trying to tell you what's going on. We're trying to tell you what's happening in your legislature. But that's what's disappearing right now. You and I, we'll get along.
That we will. Jesse, I appreciate you guys reaching out to me. I appreciate your time this morning. I'll stay tuned to your podcast. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me on your show.
All the best, man. Take care.
That's your Canada Land. I hope you liked it. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Our website is at canadaland.com. Sue Churin reported this episode. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Andre Prout is our production coordinator. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Check them out at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Justin Ling, freelance journalist and author of the Bug-Eyed and Shameless newsletter. Hello.
Hello.
Today on the show, Justin, time spent in tents, getting intense. We'll ponder the relevance of evidence. And Justin Trudeau gets his Freakonomics on, what to make of the Prime Minister's podcasting hobby. Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
It is nothing like what we're seeing in the U.S., but there are new encampments popping up on Canadian campuses. McGill appears to have the biggest encampment in the country. We are, though, seeing protesters setting up tents at the University of Ottawa and the University of British Columbia.
I wish everyone gets along.
McGill says it supports students' rights to protest, but things have taken a turn with video evidence showing people using anti-Semitic language and intimidating behavior.
Well, first of all, the video evidence was never presented, and we for the past 7 months, we've been accused of anti-Semitism. I don't think it will ever be let go of, because that's their only, their only fake argument against us. It's not even real.
So these student protests at American universities have been a big news story for a couple of weeks. And got to start by mentioning that just these images of violence on the campus of UCLA between protesters and counter-protesters, and cops cracking down at Columbia University, and now police intervention being considered here in Canada. Justin, you went to New York to have a look at Columbia to report about this?
Yeah, I went down there for The Line, a cousin Substack publication, I suppose. I spent kind of a whirlwind afternoon hanging out with some of the protesters and some of the non-protesters at Columbia. And I think I actually got a really good sense of what the actual vibes were like on campus, at least as they were last Thursday. And I'll tell you what, my expectation did not meet reality in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, I think, and I've been talking to other people about this since I came back, if you ask people, they have this, I think, understanding that this thing is huge and that, you know, students are cowering in fear from it, and that it's this big, intimidating event on campus that has sort of taken over the entire university. And I can't tell you how inaccurate that is. Like, I got there, I had a hard time even realizing where the encampment was at first. It was in a tiny corner of the quad, 100, maybe 150 protesters, almost as many media. There were students milling about, you know, taking grad photos, chilling in the quad, going to class, getting coffee. I saw a ton of Jewish students, like, wearing kippahs, wandering by, heard students speaking Hebrew walking past. There's literally a field of Israeli flags right next to the encampment that someone put up that have sat there untouched. I spoke to the protesters, very quick to denounce anti-Semitism on campus, very quick to state their actual aims, which is, you know, to get their university to divest from companies that are involved in the Israeli defense industry. And I had a really hard time squaring the sort of apocalyptic visions that I've heard people describe this thing with. So the NYPD went in Tuesday night, and it was really jarring to watch the NYPD break windows and conduct mass arrests on campus.
Well, it's certainly been getting the kind of like round the clock cable news coverage as if this is like just the biggest thing happening, a major rift. I take what you're saying, that like what you saw just did not match that media reality. And we're kind of absorbing that narrative, and then we kind of like have a little bit later, as usual, the Canadian version of the American thing. I'm always focused on the Canadian thing. It spread to Canada. Last weekend, we saw an encampment set up on the campus of my alma mater at McGill. I turned to Canadian media to find out what was going on. It did not go well, my quest for information about this. On Monday, CBC's Daily News podcast dedicated a full episode to the phenomenon writ large of these encampments around the world, including in Canada. And they mentioned off the top that, yes, this was now in Canada, in Montreal. And they promised an episode that would explain why students are compelled to